The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
It's a pleasure to be here, and it's an honor to be here. And let me just express before I begin my admiration for Rabbi Cohn, I'm not going to do his introduction to me as well, but he's been a legend in Kirov, a legend in Kirov with children that a lot of people had given up on, a legend in terms of working with families that others had given up on as well. Really kind of a pioneer in the work of working with children and working with reaching out to the disenfranchised. Okay, let's define our terms. When you hear the word mensch, what do you think of? What comes to mind? Let's list the attributes of a mensch quickly, if we may. Just shout out, that's fine. What?
Decent.
Decent.
Considerate.
Excuse? Treats people in a caring way, the way he would like to be treated. Yes?
Well-behaved.
You're referring to your children now? Well-behaved. So when you say, be a mensch, that's what you have in mind. Behave. Behave. Yes?
A good neshama, a leitov.
A good neshama.
A leitov, a good heart.
Right. A Rosh Hashiva from one of the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael once came to my classroom when I was teaching seniors a few years ago at Ida Crown Jewish Academy in Chicago. And he asked a question in the group, and I was teaching a boys' class that year, and I was teaching a girls' class as well. And he did the same, experiment with each group. And he asked the group, what do you want to be when you grow up? So they went around the room, and one boy said a lawyer and a doctor. Occasionally you got a rabbi kid and a few teachers. Mostly it was real estate, business. And the girls, same answers, actually. Lawyer, doctor, a few said mothers. And he let them all say what they wanted to be when they grew up. And then he said, you didn't answer my question. I didn't ask you what you wanted to do to make money in the future. I asked you what you wanted to be. And we need to differentiate between doing and being. There are things that we do, but who are we? Who are we? What do we want for our children? What do we want them to be? So it used to be, every Jewish mother would say, I want my children to be a doctor. And we focused on the things that they would do. We focused on how much money they would have in the bank. Maybe we focused on their scholarship, even a rabbi. It's what do you want to be? When you think of a mensch, the aleph is, are we raising menschen or not? Decent, caring, honest, loyal, trustworthy, sensitive to others. There was a TV character from the 80s that was known as a mensch in Hollywood, at least his character. The 80s and the 90s. Do you remember MASH? Is this a group where you could admit seeing television? I would guess that it is. I don't know, maybe not. Maybe nowadays you can't. The Alan Alda character, he was the mensch. Maybe. But he was honest and he was caring and he wasn't prejudiced. When we think of mensch, what do we think of? How are our children and the issue of bullies? Are we raising bullies? Are we raising bystanders? Do we train our children about what to do if they see someone hurt? Do we teach them the respect and the dignity of every human being? Do we live what we're taught, that every human being is Selam Elokim? Do we live it? Do we teach it? Do we talk it? And do we walk it? raising a mensch. One of my favorite stories of a mensch is a story about Rabbi Mendel Kaplan. Rabbi Mendel Kaplan was a Rebbe in Skokie Yeshiva for many years, and then he moved to Philadelphia, and he was a Rebbe in the Yeshiva there. He died an elderly man. A few months after he died, a different Rebbe in the Yeshiva took his car into the mechanic in the neighborhood in Philadelphia. And there was an elderly black mechanic there working on his car. And he did it, he paid him, he was about to leave, and the mechanic turned to this Rebbe and said, "Is the old rabbi, how's the old rabbi doing? Say hello from me." He said, "Which old rabbi?" And he described him. He said, "You know, Rabbi Kaplan." So he said, "Well, you know, I'm sorry to tell you this, but he passed away." This African-American mechanic began to cry. He sobbed, he's crying. Finally, he pulls himself together, and the rabbi said, "What's the deal? How do you know him?" He said, "Well, he used to bring his car in to me." "Okay. What's the end of the story?" "Well, whenever he brought his car in, he would hang around the garage with me and ask me questions." It's an old man in his 80s. "And then he would tell me, like, how do you know all this stuff?" He said, he's the only person in my life that would compliment me, that would value my work, that would make me feel smart, and then make me feel I have value." You know, would anybody have known this story if this conversation hadn't occurred between the two of them? You know, a mensch par excellence. Do we teach our children, you know? Right? So here's the trick, and you know, you're probably not going to like this because, you know, people sometimes when I do this workshop and we do this talk, and people say, "How do I make my kids a mensch?" And you know the trick answer to that is you can't make a mensch if you're not a mensch. So the way you make a mensch is by being a mensch. So again, let's define our terms. My Rosh Hashiva, Rav Yitzchak Feigelstock, he should have Refuah Shleima, the Rosh Hashiva of Long Beach, right down the road from here, who I was lucky enough to get to see today for a few minutes before coming here, and that was a treat. I didn't think that was going to happen because he hasn't been well, but that was a real treat. So I'm kind of like walking on air now because my Rebbe kissed me about 2 hours ago. That was great, just great. So one of the things he taught us in yeshiva, when he would talk about parenting, and you know this and you've heard it, and I'm sure Dr. Pelkowitz, a dear friend of mine, said it last week, so you're probably tired of hearing it, but there's very little that we teach our children by way of lecture. That was the subtitle of your class too. Making a mensch without what? Yelling, fetching, or nagging, right? That wasn't my title. It's Rabbi, I think Rabbi Cohen. Somebody came. Well, I didn't come up with it. Pretty sure that about a month ago when you asked me to do this, somebody said, "Talk about preparing your kids for Israel." And then I'm glad I called a week ago and said, "Tell me the exact title."
You got two invitations.
Oh, that's what it is. Oh, okay. Okay, good, good. Okay, so my Rebbe used to say that there's very little you do as parents that has to do with a lecture. You know, he would say, if you want your kids to learn Torah, learn Torah. If you want your kids to give tzedakah, give tzedakah. Moshe Feinstein's Zatzal actually used to say that while it might be better theoretically to give charity in a private, quiet way, but that's not good chinuch, because your kids have to see you giving tzedakah. Maybe you could let your kids in on the secret and then you get both somehow without telling them for whom. You know, we know it. We all know it. How did we learn most of what we know? It's modeling. So the trick with the idea of making a mensch or raising a mensch is not just that they need to see us being a mensch to others, they need to see us being a mensch to them. You know, so let's define our terms of Menschlichkeit. Is that the proper conjugation? Who are we to our children? You know, who are we to our children? What are we to our children? It's not the words that we say. Sometimes it's the way we say those words. It's who we are to them, you know? When mommy and daddy, or mommy and tati, or Ima and Abba get into an argument, how do they talk to each other? When mommy and tati, or mommy and daddy are angry at me, how do they talk to me? Because this is great Gemara. The Gemara tells us, if you want to check somebody out and you want to know their character, you know that play on words? What are the three words that sound alike in Aramaic or Hebrew? Excellent. Both sides got it. Excellent. Excellent. Kiso, koso, kaiso. Amazing. 2,000 years ago. Amazing. The understanding, the wisdom of the Gemara, of an understanding of how to figure out the character of a person. We could have said, the Gemara was saying, how to define a mensch. What's a mensch? Well, it picked a hot-button topic, which is kiso, which is how is he or she with money issues. Kiso is their pocket, their pocketbook, their wallet. It's a hot-button issue. How are we with hot-button issues, things that get our blood going? Koso is how are we when we're vulnerable. Koso is the cup, when a person is drunk too much, but they're vulnerable, the defenses are down. How do we act when we're overtired? How do we act when we drink? Do we drink? And the big one, to me, the biggest indicator of a mensch is how are we bekaiso? How are we bekaiso? How are we when we're angry? How are we when they push our buttons? Because we all know that there's no better person in the world to push your button. It's always a close tie. Who pushes your button more, your spouse or your child? All right, so when your kids become teenagers, they usually win. But until that time and after that time, the spouse wins. So it depends on the stage, right? I always say, and I say it all the time, and my wife's tired of hearing it, although she agrees with the statement, is that until I got married, I thought I was a nice guy. I got along with everybody. Except my parents sometimes, but I got along with everybody. Got along with my chavrusa. If we didn't like each other, we broke up by the next chavrusa tumult. Got along with my roommates. If we were mad at each other, we just didn't talk to each other. And then, it passed. But that's not good marriage skills. I had to learn how to be a mensch. A mensch means, how do I act when I'm tired? When my wife and I were, married a few years, we had an argument one day, and we, finally figured out what the argument was about. I had to go to Leviathan. I was schlepping. I was tired. It was emotionally draining. And she was home with two kids, and one of the kids was decorating the house with products from his diaper. So I came home, and we, within a few minutes, got into upset because both of us were in the competition of who's more tired, right? And what we each needed then wasn't spouses, as we both needed mommies. Okay, part of being a mensch is, I'm tired, she's tired. Let's take turns. Well, I want to go first. Mensch is, this is not the playground. Mensch is, she's tired. My child, the ability to have empathy for your child, to put yourself in the place of your child, this is teaching Menschlichkeit. Do they see us acting as menches consistently? I want to cringe sometimes when I go over to somebody's house and I'm visiting and there's a cleaning woman in the house, and in front of the children, the mother or the father treats the cleaning woman like she's not human. I'm thinking to myself, separate from the Chil Hashem Shebo, separate from that, do you know what you're teaching your children? Do you know that you're teaching your children that some people are human and some people aren't? Do you know every time we use the word Shvarza, we're teaching our children that some people are human and some people aren't? So the kids, well, we want our kids to get exactly, but it's not what they did. They get the bigger picture. If we come home and make fun of the rabbi at the speech, we've taught our children that it's okay to respect another human being, even a rabbi. We have to are we a mensch to our children? What do our children see? Pesach Kron talks openly in a beautiful way about parents who want their children to be honest, and he has this story about, but the parents, when they came to the amusement park, say, but tell them you're under 12. What's the message? You know, kids pick up the whole message. They pick up the whole message. Parents have to live with a sense of, you know, every human being has dignity. And probably the most important lesson is with my children. 16-year-old girl once told me that she will always remember when she was 12, she got into a very bad argument with her mother, and her mother said to her, I'm sorry I had you. It's one sentence. It was said in the heat of the moment. When I talked to the mother about it, she said, I don't even remember saying it. That's certainly not what I feel. But here it was 4 years later, and this girl says, I remember this conversation all the time. The best indicator of whether our children are learning by witnessing Menschlichkeit is, again, what do we do? What do we do when we're most upset? What do we say? What do we give ourselves permission to say? You know? So many of us feel like we're still on the playground. You hurt me, I'll hurt you. Okay, on the playground, maybe that was good. It probably wasn't good on the playground either, but whatever. Right? In the family, it's deadly. It's deadly. So, you know, do we all do that sometimes? Yes. Yeah, but we shouldn't. And if we do that, what do we need to say? What does a mensch do when they've hurt someone, when they've crossed the line? You need to take responsibility. You need to say, I'm sorry. This is a young group, so you don't remember that crazy movie from the 70s, Love Means. Right, love story? Love Means, fill in the blank. Okay, ridiculous. In a long line of Hollywood ridiculousness. Love means, especially with children, but also with marriage, always having to say you're sorry, taking responsibility. Because one of the midos of a mensch is responsibility. I can't tell you how powerful a parental apology is. A parental apology is very powerful. If you've done something and you yell and you cross the line, we have 5 children, Baruch Hashem. So, you know, one of the best things, and a lot of things that I did wrong, but one of the best things I did is I learned how to say I'm sorry to my children. Now again, if you're doing this every day, it doesn't make sense. The apology loses power. But if every once in a while you lose it, and basically it's pretty good, and then you say you're sorry, I was able to then go back to my kids at a different time when one of them hurt each other or one of them hurt me, and I was able to demand an apology from that child that was the hurter, and I had credibility. I was able to say, in this family, we say I'm sorry, and I didn't have to feel guilty. You know, he could look me in the face and know it's true, because last week, Tati said he's sorry. And last week, Mommy said that she was sorry. It's powerful. You have to understand, and I'm sorry from an adult to a child, even a teenager, even a tough teenager, even a crazy tough teenager, is giving him dignity, giving her dignity. We need to parent with the awareness of the dignity of our children. Because if you look deep down at what a mensch is someone that understands dignity of others. A mensch is, I'm careful. Somebody sent me a copy of an article that they're writing for Hamadiyah that's going to probably go in a few weeks about when we do chesed for others, are we careful about the dignity that we're doing chesed for? And there were like nightmare stories in there about people that are delivering food packages and they come with their whole family and tromp through the house together looking what they have. And this crazy story, one of the kids said to the mother out loud so that the recipient heard is, hey, you said they were poor. They have a lot of stuff here. Okay, that's a nightmare. My guess is that doesn't happen that often, I would like to think. Although, probably in 1,000-page book can be written of the stupid things that are said at Shiva houses. Because we're not thinking about would we want to hear that. Sometimes we're just thinking about saying something that will make me feel better without thinking about what it might feel for the person who's suffering this loss. Menschlichkeit is, am I aware of the dignity of each human being? And the best way to model that is in the marriage, in front of the children, and not in front of the children, because children know everything. You know, what are we modeling? What do they see? How do we treat mishalachim when they come to the door? How do we treat others that need us? How do we treat people that are less powerful than we are? Because you have to see in the model of that. You know who the least powerful people are in our lives? The children. So they're watching. I'm not saying they're watching consciously, but they're watching unconsciously. They're learning lessons, how to treat people less powerful than them. And who did they learn that from? How you treat them. When you're angry, when they're A students, and they look beautiful, and everything's great, and they know how to tell an amusing story, and they're charming, of course they're a nachas machine. Great. What about the C students? What about the ones who challenge us? What about the ones who are difficult from, you know, parents sometimes say, this child was difficult at birth. They didn't nurse well, they didn't sleep well. You know, and there are children that are like that. There are definitely children like that. I remember being so angry, and now I'm so embarrassed, but I remember being so angry at either my first child or my second child because they had the chutzpah to not nap on Shabbos afternoon when I wanted to nap. Obviously, they have no kibbutz of it. I mean, that's crazy. That's much crazy. I was crazy. We're all crazy. The respecting of, because, you know, here's the, you know, I want to teach an idea that's, I've come to realize, and it's just so important. We're all aware of it, but I want you to think about it perhaps in a different way. Every conversation we have with someone we love is always, as we well know, there's always probably 3 or 4 simultaneous conversations going on. There's the overt conversation, and then there's the covert conversation. So the obvious covert conversation, the nonverbals. If I'm talking to my wife while I'm checking my emails, what's the message? What do you mean? The words? I'm saying all the right words. Yeah, sure, dear, as I'm going down the thing. Well, you know, even if I was saying all the right words, the message is the emails are more important than you. When we don't, you know, that's menschlichkeit, common decency. The kind of stuff that I would do for my boss, do I do that for my spouse? Do I do that for my children? Full attention, eye contact, no nonverbals. Right? Now, teenagers know how to teach us about nonverbals. What do teenagers do, especially teenage girls, do with their eyes? Yeah, they're the queen of eye rolls, right? The queens of eye rolls, right? And what does the eye roll say? Nothing you have to say to me has any value, so go ahead and talk. Because I'm not doing anything with it, because I'm not listening. So again, there's very little. They watch, They feel the way we treat them. There's very little we have to teach them directly. Perhaps the one area that we do have to insist on is expectations. Having expectations, like firm expectations in the house. Expectations that they'll help in the house. Expectations that they will be menschlich. And we could demand that. But again, it's much easier to demand it if we live it. If we live it. And you know, it's a huge burden, but that's the deal. That is the deal of parenting. Yeah. We need to control our temper. Every single time, not every single time, 95% of the time when parents bring kids who have out of control anger into my office, I always send the kid out first and talk to the parents and say, okay, before we start, just tell me, how do you guys handle anger? And somebody's going to blush. Well, I do have an anger problem, one of them will say, and I'll swear when I'm angry, but he's getting angry over silly things. Well, what's the message? Message is, whatever gets you going. If it's okay to lose it, that means in this family, it's okay. And if you punish me for losing it, you're not teaching me that it's not okay in this family. You're just teaching me that you're a liar. That's the message. The message is, it's okay for me to not be a mensch, but you have to be a mensch. That's deadly. That's deadly with Yiddishkeit. It's just deadly. It's toxic for the home. So, what do you do? Well, what happens if it's already happening? Do I go out of here and say, okay, I'm doomed? No. But, we have to look at ourselves. Couples need to talk to each other and say, are we modeling menschlichkeit to each other? Are we modeling menschlichkeit to the children? How much lashon hara do we speak in this house? Do we speak respectfully? How do we treat the people that are beneath us, power-wise? How do we treat people that are needier? How do we treat our employees? How do we treat our neighbors? How do we treat non-Jews? How do we treat those who we could get away with not treating well? Because that's the key. That's the key. When your child comes home and says and tells you an amusing story because the girl, there's a girl, and she's such a nerd, and she always dresses the wrong way, and her hair is always dirty, and she has no clue how to dress, and she doesn't know the cool ways to talk, and all the kids were making fun of her, and it was so funny. What's the reaction? So again, don't go crazy on your child, but can you communicate to your child how sad it is for that child, how painful it is for that child? Can you encourage your child to call that child up? Because a lot of children, all the research says that they're the only successful ways of solving the bullying problem is by training the bystanders. Not the victim, not the bully. Harder, much harder to do, you eventually bullies end up in prison sometimes. But it's very hard to get them to change. Although if they're young enough, they're changeable. But changing the culture of the classroom, the culture of the home. Is this home a bullying home? In this home, does dad bully mom who bullies oldest child, who bullies second child? I worked with a family like that. Everybody was a bully and everybody was a victim, except for number one. But he was a bully at work. He was being bullied at work. So we have the cycle. In other words, I will use my power to intimidate you to get my way. Parenting through intimidation is deadly. It destroys the spirit of our children and makes enemies of our own kids. We have to go away from the model of intimidation. Even if patching was ever a good thing, all the research from this generation and the last generation say it's counterproductive. Not one study supports patching. It's counterproductive. And if it's counterproductive, then I don't know why it should be mutter. How could you hit somebody if it's not going to do anything? Sometimes we do it because we're angry. You made me feel like a bad parent. And then I hit them. And now I feel like a worse parent, so I hit them again. your fault. It's your job to make me feel like a successful parent. So if we don't hit with our fists, do we hit with our words? Do we withdraw? Do we give our kids a silent treatment? Our kids are so needy for love. I could talk for 2 hours on how needy the children of this generation are for love. It's a rough world. The house needs to be a respite, not a battleground. Sometimes you walk into a house, and you ever walk into a house and it's heavy? Like it's just dark, you can't get enough air to breathe. You hear a Shabbos guest at a table and you feel the tension in the air. Doesn't take too long before you figure out who's the one that's making the tension. Sometimes it's a child. Too much power for a teenager. To everybody's afraid of that child. But it's fear that brings heaviness. You know? The opposite of a mensch is someone that creates an Eimei Yisera in their house. A father or a mother that people are frightened of. You could say, what do you mean? But you're supposed to be afraid of your parents, aren't you? So Rav Hirsch writes that the word yira, which means fear, comes from the word to be ro'eh, to see. What does that mean? So what do you mean? What does fear mean? The yira means to be in awe of your parents so that when you walk through life, you see your parents in front of you, like Yosef saw Yaakov's image in his face. Was Yosef afraid that Yaakov was going to hurt him? He was afraid of disappointing, of his father having a lesser opinion of him. That's yira. Let's get away from the model of intimidation. It's just deadly. It damages our relationship with our children and makes them bitter old people. Just one or two more things, and then I'll open it up for questions. I'm going to stop at around 9 for questions, all right? I think we started at 8:20. One of my favorite stories is with Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. You probably heard it. The story's made its way around, but it bears repeating. Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal lived in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. So there was a boy that would come, you know, depending on the year, somebody would come pick him up so that he can go to the yeshiva to give the lecture. Okay, so the yeshiva was a few blocks away, MTJ. So this day, a boy came to the house to pick up Rav Moshe. And Moshe was all ready, had the Gemara in the hand, they're about to leave, putting on his coat, they're walking, as they get to the door, there's a knock on the door, and there's a woman standing there, and the woman turns to Moshe and says, can I speak to the Rosh Yeshiva just for a few minutes? So he said, sure. And he came in, the boy was a little bit nervous, started to look at his watch, it's going to be late for the shir, but Moshe, the Gadol Hadar, decided. So they went into the living room, and the boy was sitting on the outside a little bit. She begins, so he said, how can I help you? She opens her mouth, she starts to talk, she doesn't get a word out, she starts crying. And she's sobbing. And she's not talking. This is going on for a few minutes. The boy's noticing this, and he notices that Ramosha's quiet, so he looked over to look at Ramosha, and he sees that Ramosha's crying also. So she's crying, Ramosha's crying, nobody's talking. After a few minutes of this, the woman kind of pulls herself together, wipes her face, takes a deep breath, stands up and says, thank you very much, and walks out the door. Not a word. Ramosha kind of pulls himself together, wipes his face, turns to the boy and says, come, we're late, let's go. The boy can't contain himself, you know, wants to know what the deal was. So on the way down to the car, it says to Moshe, you know, what was she crying about? Moshe said, I don't know. He said, do you know her? No. Never met her. Well, then he couldn't contain himself anymore. So Rebbe, why was the Reshiva crying? Why were you crying? So he turned to him, and like not understanding, like, you know, mensch par excellence, right? He said, how could you sit with someone in so much pain and not cry? This is what we want from our children. You don't need to be Rav Moshe Feinstein to have this concept, this idea that someone else's pain is my pain. Yeah, to be a caring individual. How do children learn caring? How do they learn empathy? How do they learn compassion? Do you remember that poem that was that was anonymous? It used to hang on the wall of my pediatrician's office when I was a kid in Borough Park. The name of the poem was "Children Learn What They Live." That's this concept here. Children live with compassion, and that means towards them, and witnessing it towards their siblings, and witnessing it towards their mother or their father from the other one, then they become compassionate. They don't become compassionate by listening to an Uncle Moshe tape. I like Uncle Moshe, but that's not how they become compassionate. They become compassionate if they live with compassion. They become caring individuals if they live with caring individuals. They become people that can control their anger if they live with people who can control their anger, not because they were punished every time they lost their temper. Is this a guarantee? No, it's not a guarantee. Could you be a perfect parent, have kids, well, go off the derech? Yes. We live in very scary times. But our job as parents is to do the best parenting that we could do. Our children need to have mensches as parents. It means in the way they talk to each other, the way they talk to other people, and the way especially they talk to their children. Okay, I'll leave you with an acronym because that's the style these days. There's a new Messiah in Klai Yisrael to do an acronym. Okay, here's the acronym, but I have to tell you, I freaked when I got here. My acronym is the word mensch, but I spell mensch differently than they did. So I had different letters. I had M-E-N-C-H, M-O-U-S-E, no, M-E-N-C-H, and they have, you spelled it with a T, right? I didn't look it up. Okay, so I had 5 minutes before the, oh, that's so nice. See, she was nervous. Thank
you. Talking about being a mensch.
Oh, very nice. Excellent. Thank you. Okay, here's the, as a way to remember. Okay, M is going to stand for, it should jump into your head, modeling. We make mention by modeling. That's the general. E, I have two for E, which is empathy, the ability of a parent and the desire and the willingness of a parent to try to put themselves in the shoes of their child who's really in pain. I don't know you, but I don't want to be a kid again. This whole thing, when you read about a fountain of youth, I don't want to be young, I don't want to do the teenage thing again, I don't want it. You know, maybe I'll go back to my 30s, maybe, I don't know. You know, I'm perfectly happy to do what Hashem wants now. You know, day to day. Okay, so E is empathy. To understand that it's hard to be a kid, especially hard in schools, it's just hard. It's hard. It's hard to be powerless. It's very hard to be a teenager. You have the body of an adult. Oftentimes a better body than an adult. Boys and girls were stronger or prettier or whatever. And you're getting male attention. You're getting attention out there. You have the body of an adult and the power of a child. It's a crazy place to be, right? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, teenagers are from, I used to say Pluto, but it's not a planet anymore. I just said it, I was together with my brother at a Shabbaton, and I said Pluto. They said, that's not a planet. So my whole speech is nothing because Pluto's not a planet anymore? But one thing we said, it's a fascinating thing, because while men are from Mars, and we're always from Mars, and women are from Venus, we were once on Pluto. Believe it or not, we were once teenagers. So we should be able to empathize even better than the Mars-Venus thing. But we don't. Probably because we don't want to go back there. It was a painful place. Okay, empathy. And the other E is expectations. Strong values that we're not afraid to share with our children. Expectations of that we are mentioned and we expect you to be a mensch. That means cleaning up after yourself. That means saying please and thank you. But again, only if we're modeling that. That means saying you're sorry if you've hurt somebody, if you hurt my feelings. Demanding it and expecting it. And it's just the atmosphere of this house. We don't allow bullying in this house. From the top down, nobody can bully. That's not the same thing as parents are in control. It's not a democracy. Parents are in control. Bullying means intimidation. Parents govern. Every child needs to feel like their voice is safe in this house, that their voice won't be demeaned. But that doesn't mean they have a vote. They have a voice, not a vote. Every child from the age of 1 to the age of 40 needs a voice, but not a vote. Parents still decide who's paying the bills here. We still decide as a couple, as a partnership. Okay, N is being nice, respectful, includes all the mental stuff that we were talking about, even when angry. I added T, and took some work, for if they had some time here with the introductions. T means takes responsibility. Taking responsibility, and that includes saying I'm sorry. C is communication, paying attention to our nonverbal communication, whether we're talking on the phone or checking our emails or doing the BlackBerry or sending faxes, that we are focused on our children only, and they see, and our children witness us doing that with our spouses as well. Communication, calm, closeness, cares for others, a lot of good C's. The last one is H, is creating a happy home. A house where it's not so heavy, where people can laugh, where parents can laugh with each other, but not laugh at each other. You know, there's a laughter in the air. There's a joyness because values are transmitted from generation to generation through simcha. Yiddishkeit is transmitted only one way, through simcha. It's not transmitted through intimidation. It's just not. It doesn't work anymore. I don't know if it ever worked. My guess is it didn't. Because even if people were from, maybe they were dead inside. I don't know. My guess is it didn't, that wasn't the way. Rav Matisyahu Salomon talks about this often, that it was always through simcha and chiba. That's how Torah is supposed to be transmitted. Okay, that's a scoop. Well, let's take questions for a few minutes. Comments, questions. So wake up the person next to you so maybe they'll ask a question. Okay, so, yes? Right.
You know, things like that.
Or that, if we're not worried about them not staying from, then we're worried about that S word, shiduchim. Well, maybe they won't fit. Maybe they won't, the tyranny of shiduchim. And, you know, it's just, it's...
Really, that they shouldn't get the drugs.
Right. So you're worried about that. Okay.
That's
right. So as opposed to focusing on...
School, the college, the jobs, and all that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a sad statement of our times. Yes. Did you want me to, I don't know what to say about that, right? Yeah, I'm agreeing. First you, and then in the back. Yes?
It's nice to say that you shouldn't show anger, but when you have four children under the age of 8 running around the house and making you sugar,
right.
What are you supposed to be able to say when dinner needs to be made and bills need to be paid? What should you be asking to do?
Call your husband and yell at him. It's hard. It's just hard. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't raise your voice every once in a while. I'm talking about being mean and intimidation. If, you know, some women and some men, some parents, you know, could set up a system where they're so organized, but I'm not telling you to do that. We didn't do that. You know, I'm not, you know, on the other hand, if you find yourself yelling at your children in mean ways all the time, something's wrong. We need to rethink this. The couple has to talk to each other. What are we going to do? Whether it means getting more help in the house, whether it means getting a tutor for the kids, whether it means, you know, parents kind of tag-teaming each other. Dad needs to be home during the high-stress times. Somebody, you know, Rabbi Taitelbaum mentioned before about not only eating together, but just being home for homework and being home for, you know, dinner, because dinner is often a stressful time because, you know, it kind of looks like Animal House in terms of food fights and stuff. So, you know, it's just... those are high stress times, yeah. Yeah, there was a Rav in Chicago who got in trouble for saying this, but he didn't back down. He said, Fathers shouldn't learn at night. It's high-stress time. They should learn get up early and learn in the morning. He didn't say, I'm not letting you off from learning, which is then overwhelming for the men. Because they're told, go out and learn. A lot of times, the chavrusas are during the high-stress times of family. Yeah, it's always during homework time, or often during homework time. You know, it's like Mincha Maariv, and it's, you know, it's very hard. But, you know, families, couples need to get together and say, you know, I once lost a client because mom was hitting the children, yelling them every single night. I turned to the dad and said, your wife is overwhelmed. She needs some help at home. He says, but that's my chavrusa time. I said, I think you need to ask a Rav whether your children being hit and yelled at every night should take, that should, you know, your learning should take precedence over that. We need another adult in this house. They had 7 children, all under the age of 9. And when I made that, he said I was a guy and walked out the door. And she burst into tears. Yeah, well, yeah. Couples need to figure it out. We need to figure it out. We need to figure it out. Can we do this? And how are we going to do it? What's the plan? What's the plan? And if you add into that mess, you know, financial pressures and sometimes people taking 2 jobs, we're asking for trouble. On the other hand, the answer isn't, I'm overwhelmed, so I'm going to parent by intimidation. We have to figure something else out. You know, I don't know what to tell you. But once in a while, I don't think it's a big deal, as long as you're not burning them with cigarettes. Because smoking is bad. Yes. Wait, I called in you in the back. Yes. No, even toddlers, I think, you get the concept. I don't think you have to make this thing of, I'm a bad, terrible person, that's why I'm apologizing. Just, you know, mommy, you know, I lost my temper. I said something that made you feel bad. I wanted you to stop doing that, but I shouldn't have said something that made you feel bad. I think kids at 2 can hear that already, 2 or 3, for sure. I think, yeah, I don't think it's so scary. Scary is an out-of-control parent who apologized. I mean, out of control parent is scary to a child. Apologizing doesn't really help when it's totally out of control. But a parent that's basically in control, that blows it every once in a while, I just think it's gold. It's such a good chinuch parenting tool to apologize to your children. And parents will argue with me and say, no, it's not right. Parents shouldn't apologize. I said, show me that in Shulchan Aruch. I don't remember seeing that one. I don't know where that one came from. Yes, yes. Wait, any man want to just... The advantage of a man raising his hand is that then we have on the tape proof that there were men here. Okay? Because men get a bad rap for that. Yes. Wait, I called you first. That's not fair. I'm sorry. Her first and then you. It's not fair, you know. Yes. Right. 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 Right, and if they spend time in another child's house where things are just chaos, and the kids run the house, and there's no menschlichkeit there, and then they come home with these kinds of things, that's difficult. Although I have to tell you, though, that I still feel that the overwhelming majority of the influence is parents, and even during the teenage years where kids will act like you have no input on them, it's not true, don't believe them. You don't have to like put it in their face. I know because I read the study that I still have influence over you. I don't think you need to let them in on the secret. But the reality is the most influential people in the life of a child is first parents and then teachers, certain teachers. But the worst teachers and the best teachers have a tremendous impact on the life of a child. Yes? Yeah, so instead of like doing a whole workshop, and it's a 2-hour deal, but there's a great book by Barbara Colarasso, I think I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her name right, but the book is called The Bully, The Bullied, and The Bystander. And it has studies that come out of Sweden, and Sweden's been like doing work on this probably for 30 years, because they had a Columbine study, they had a Columbine story there, where kids shot up a school. Every time kids shoot up a school, they were victims of bullies. But it's what you put together is a victim of a bully with pathology, right? Typical victims of bullies don't buy a gun. right? They go home and they cry, right? But if you then put that with pathology and perhaps violence in the home, you have an explosion. So they started studying bullies, and then all the studies pointed to that with training, ongoing training of teachers and bystanders, very clever, creative, easy kinds of stuff that you could like tell your children, like, when this child is being bullied, because most children are not going to stand up to the bully. So some of the training is teaching kids to band together and then face the bully as a group. That's still hard. Sometimes the best thing you could do for a victim is to call them up at night and say, hey, I'm still your friend. You know, I know that guy's a jerk. I'm still your friend. And the studies say that makes such a difference. The other thing they talk about is like, but in general, is training the culture of the classroom, which the kids are really educated to see that this isn't funny. And if kids don't laugh, bullies, for the most part, need an audience. That's what they say, at least children age bullies. And adult bullies are different, perhaps. Yes?
You were talking a little bit about how that child learns difficult from birth kind of thing.
Yes.
So what about, you know, it's very easy to say that we should not, you know, react so, you know, very harshly.
It's very hard.
You have this one child that really is ruling the house.
Right.
No,
so if the child's ruling the house, they have too much power. The parents have to rule the house. If the child's ruling the house, you must get professional intervention. And it's nice. It's such a pleasure to be in a place that's not in my city that doesn't look like I'm drumming up business. It's so nice to just be able to say it, and that way I can prove to others I really mean it. It's not just, you know, so yeah, if a child has too much power, you must get into either family therapy or some family therapy perhaps is the best, because there's a dance going on. The child is only the obvious piece. It's, you know, something's going on with the parents, something's going on with the other kids, you know, and what you do is you empower the other children and you empower the parents. But it's not okay. I don't mean to say it's not okay. I'm saying, but then to say, this child's been difficult, and I've worked with parents who really take revenge on the difficult children, that's not Torah-dic, and it doesn't work, because, you know, they have the last word. What I mean by that is because if they have a breakdown, then you have a lifetime. You know, or if they go off the derech, then you have a lifetime of dealing with that. It's just, you know, it's very hard.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org. Where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.